Toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-loo-ma-loo-ma-toodle-i-ay. Any umbrellas to mend today. Bring your parasol, it may be small, it may be big.
So, Rita had the first conversation with Bowers, and he said a couple of things that you picked up on, but I will reiterate. He sussed out pretty quickly that Rita was no maid because his dear old mum couldn't afford a maid, and sniffed out your bookish credentials immediately and said, are you after the book? And he said, so who are you with, Dives, Drummle, or that French bastard, De Castries? I think he used a stronger word than bastard. But he mentioned a name that should mean something to all three of you, because, of course, De Castries, it's the De Castries version.
Yeah.
Of the book that everyone's after, and that's all that history going back hundreds of years.
So he's after his own book?
Well, no, because it was his ancestor's book.
Right, yeah, obviously, yes.
From the 17th century.
I've got 16th century in my notes.
16th century, yeah. I think the Castries family only came into possession of it somehow later, but it's complicated. But anyway, so there's this French bastard that's also after it, and he says he just wants to sell it to the highest bidder so we can get out of the smoke for good. Go somewhere nice and sunny like Canada. I don't know why he thinks Canada is sunny particularly. And he said that he never meant any harm to come to his dear old mum, but obviously he saw the whole thing. In fact, he only just got away with his own life and obviously got the book out. And then, of course, he said the special thing about the book, it was owned by Jack the Ripper, apparently. And that's because his old mum told him a story that she was once in service to a lady of mystical bent. And the lady had a friend called Mabel, who fell under the sway of someone called Dunstan, an adventurer, and the three went into business together. This was in 1890. And Dunstan was given to strange magical boastings, repeatedly hinting at his murderous past. His paramour, this Mabel lady, decided he was actually Jack the Ripper. So Mabel went to the mystical friend for advice. That's the woman that Bower's mother was in service to. She went to her friend for advice. The lady decided to search Dunstan's belongings, which he kept on their shared premises. She found a locked chest holding some books, papers, and blood-stained cravats. She shut the chest but kept a copy of the key. So when the business fell apart and Mabel and Dunstan ended their sordid romance, the lady once more opened Dunstan's chest, this time taking not only Mabel's quite immodest letters, but the oldest and most powerful of his books. When the lady retired to Wales, she left the book with her trusted maid, Mrs. Bowers, for safekeeping-like, as a sort of payment for faithful service. You also asked about what powers the book had. He did not have much of an idea, but he said something that the eye is also a gate. But that's about as much as he could understand. He didn't have the brain for it. And I think you were going to try and just get him to sell it to you directly, but it seems like he's got his eye on an auction and boosting up the price as much as he can.
I thought you said that if we give him enough cash.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes. If you give him enough cash, he might sell it to you directly. But he seems like a fairly shifty character.
Unlike we gentlemen of good standing.
Unlike the three of you, yes.
Oh, sorry, gentlemen and lady.
A gentleman and lady, and he said he can't sell you the book right now, but don't worry, it's safe. But think up a worthy offer, and I'll tell you when we can seal the deal. We shouldn't ought to meet again till then. And that is where we ended, with him basically getting up to leave and giving a very clear indication that you were to wait and until he contacted you again. So, let's pick up there.
I think I suggested that we contact our patron and see about getting sufficient funds.
Exactly. Yes. So, Bowers has just stood up in this smoky pub, the Black Lion. He's just got up in this smoky pub, the Black Lion, getting ready to leave. And I think, Rita, you were almost wanting to stop him, weren't you? Or something. Were you not?
Yeah, why not? That'd be a good idea.
Well, alternatively, Miss Rita, I suppose you could just follow him. And, I mean, it would probably be a poor idea for all three of us to do it, but you seem to be rather adept at subterfuge. Do you think that perhaps if you followed him home, we might find out the location where he is keeping the book?
I think that's what it's like the films, is it? That'd be paramount.
Terrible.
That's what I'm going to do.
I don't think Paramount existed in 1931 or whatever.
Oh, well, fucking hell.
MGM, then.
Off to a flying start. That'd be Paramount, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow him out.
Okay. Oh, because I had to check that. Yeah, it was founded in 1912. Oh, no, it was called Famous Play... No, hold on.
Yes.
It was called Famous Players Company then. It only became Paramount in 1927. Okay. Just so you know, this is important stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, what year is this?
1931. It's been Paramount for 4 years.
All right. You win. So, as you're getting up to go... Well, first of all, I'll give you all a luck refresh, because you're all so terrible. You're all at such low luck.
So it's traditional.
So, Emery, yes, you get a
D10. Uh-huh.
And here comes the one, as usual.
Yes.
Oh, I failed it. Fantastic. You got four points.
Oh, no. Six.
Six! And the Spencer rolls are critical. I mean, that's literally the only time you don't want to roll a one is then. I think that means you lose luck, isn't it? If you roll critical on your luck refresh. No, poor you. Right, nothing. Don't get anything for a one in this game. So as you're getting up to follow, we really should have introduced that new skill, shadowing, because that was introduced in Ghost Jack or Kill, but we never really did it. But it would have been good for this as well.
Okay, let's introduce it now. What does Rita get for shadowing?
Well, you start at 10, of course.
How's it different from stealth?
Well, apparently it is. According to the sort of... was there stealth in the original Call of Cthulhu? Or was that not a skill?
There was sneak and hide, and they were combined together into stealth in 7th edition.
Okay, because they would have been using the 2nd edition rules back then, and they introduced shadowing as a new skill for some reason. But anyway...
I think there's a particular skill set involved in shadowing. And just on a side note, I did have that feeling in the last couple of weeks. I did have that feeling of, I want Rita to be a better fucking private detective.
Stop headbutting people.
Yeah, there should be some mechanism. I'm kind of stuck with her being an aviator. And think of all the stuff she's done.
There is a mechanism, but it only really kicks in when you go on sea journeys for some weird reason.
Right.
But you could say it's in between scenarios, you can learn a new skill. But for now, we'll park that for now.
Send you out on a boat in lake or something.
We'll just use your stealth roll, but don't make it yet.
What I'd like to do is add shadow 10 to stealth 20, giving me an overall 30, please.
All right, go on. Because you have been training as a private investigator.
Yeah, exactly. 13. 13.
Okay. Well, here we go. And that's good because it's going to be an opposed roll against his spot hidden. So let's deal with that in a minute.
Can I spend some of my newfound luck?
Yeah, you can if you want. Well, you're making an extreme.
Can I make that an extreme?
You'd need to get a 6 for an extreme. So you'd need to spend 7 luck.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, that's fine by me. Yeah. Down to 18.
Here comes the group luck rolls. But as you're... leaving the pub, I think the other two, Milton and Emery, you can both make either a spot hidden or a psychology roll, as you wish.
I'll try psychology.
Psychology. I'm going to do spot hidden.
Oh, dear. Okay. That's a fail. Okay.
It doesn't matter which, shall we? Because we both rolled terribly.
Do either of you want to push your rolls by any chance? Somehow? This is to sense something going on in the pub. So if you can tell me how you might...
be more aware of our surroundings.
It's a rough pub with some fairly dodgy-looking characters in it.
Well, I suppose Dr. Watson was standing up, ready to get another drink. One for the road, because he was about to suggest to Milton that we go off and do something else. And... yes, why not? Then he'll just say to a couple of the men who are having a very loud conversation by the bar as he's buying the drink and looking around, I'm sorry, gentlemen, could you keep that down just a bit? This gin is giving me a bit of a headache and you're not really helping there.
Oh, dear. All right. Make that push psychology roll. Here we go.
Fucking hell, it worked.
It worked.
Right. Is it worth me trying to push my roll?
I'd say don't.
Right, okay.
You've bucked the odds there. So these two look, for all the life, like they're characters out of a Dickens novel. are not the nice type of characters. More like the Bill Sykes type of characters. They're probably longshoremen. Actually, is that an English expression or is it just American expression?
I think it's American.
I think it's just America, isn't it? Yeah, so they're dockers.
Dock workers? Yeah.
Yeah, they're a couple of dock workers. And they look like they've had quite a few pints already. And when you sort of politely ask them to keep their loud and foul-mouthed conversation down a bit, one of them spins around and you can see his fist bunching up. And he looks at you and he says, "I don't think you're worth it, mate. Now, why don't you come here and have that drink with us?" And he puts his arm around you and hugs you in close. You can smell the beer and the whiskey on his breath and the mixed with the body odour coming from underneath his arm.
A drink's a drink.
And he says, "I'll tell you what, the fucking customers tonight in here makes it look like fucking Piccadilly Circus. Or just a circus, period. I mean, fucking hell, what? This is a working man's pub. Don't want any fancy types coming in here, but I suppose you're right."
"I am a working man of sorts. I'm a shopkeeper. I mean, that is surely a working man. I may not rely on my muscles. At my advanced years, that's probably for the best. But I do put in a good solid day's work."
"Oh, you were with that young Irish bird. I saw her over there. Was just left, was you?"
Yes, Miss Rita."
"Right. Yeah, we saw a few earlier on tonight. Well, there was this Yank. Oh, two Yanks. I couldn't believe it. There was this older fella, came in with a pretty young thing. Anyway, I don't know, and then some German lady came in. Right stuck up she was. Well, I don't know."
"But this is London. It takes all sorts. And you are right across the road from really quite an interesting bookshop. And there is, I suppose, all sorts of trade that comes through there that probably spills over to this pub from time to time."
Then his mate sort of leans in and he says, "Yeah, you should have seen her. That German lady. She did something weird to him. I don't know."
"Weird how?"
"What was it, Harry?" Harry says, I don't know, she like waved her hand, and then they all got up and left. Fucking weird if you ask me. Anyway, I reckon that's the last we've seen of them. Won't be coming back here."
"Oh, yes, that does sound very German, I say, and knock back my gin and wander back to Milton."
And then as you're heading back, the sort of Weasley one says, "Yeah, I wouldn't have minded a go at that one either myself." And from their description, it was pretty clear that he was talking about Hamp and Nora.
Yes.
Of course.
"Yes, I'll go back and relay all that to Milton and say, well, I suppose we should probably find Hamp and Nora at some stage and just see how they are. But before then, while we're in the neighbourhood, how would you feel about trying to open a hole in a wall?"
"Oh, I'd be very interested in trying something like that, having been scuppered the last time I came across a door in a wall, a door with a hole?"
Yes. What is a door but a very specific application of a hole?"
"Well, yes, it's... I can't elaborate on that."
"This is very philosophical, very philosophical."
Yeah. So with that, we will leave you there pondering the meaning of door, and you can tell me in a bit where you intend to go. I presume you're heading back to the alleyway or to the architect's office.
"Absolutely.
I'm very interested in that area."
"Okay, good. Yeah. So, Rita, you slink out onto the rain-slicked cobble streets of Whitechapel, and you're moving as carefully as you can not to make any noise, and you're hanging back a little bit, but you can see already that Bowers is almost like a nervous deer. He's kind of like looking left and right as he walks down the street. At one point it looks like he's about to look behind him, and we'll see whether he spots you. So he's going to make a spot hidden roll. He has to equal your extreme, so he needs to roll a really low roll here. And no, he doesn't.
If he fails, can he fall over in a drain or something?
In a drain? No, he can't. This is about whether he sees you. So how far back do you want to hang?
"I'm ducking behind the matchstick girl. There's the lavender lady.
It's a rainy night in Whitechapel. There's not a lot of people around, so you're having to duck into doorways and hide at the corner of buildings as you get to them, as you're following him. And he heads down an alleyway.
I'm about 50 feet away from him.
You're heading down an alleyway, and you catch a whiff of the Thames, actually. You seem to be heading to some of the really run-down, almost slum buildings by the side of the river.
Okay.
And you can see Bowers up ahead. He's still looking very skittish. At one point, he actually goes up to a railing by the side and looks down into the dark waters of the Thames below. And then he hurries on into the night. And I want you to make a spot hidden or a listen roll, Rita.
So it'll be spot hidden. Here we go. 55 against 25.
Well, no. So.
Yeah, no, I'm going to carry on. I'll just carry on.
The dark and the rain are making a good... are masking any chance of hearing or seeing anything at this moment. And maybe the tide has come in or something. Or maybe a boat went past or something. Because suddenly in front of you, there's this big spray of water coming up from the river. It kind of almost goes over... it goes up and over the bank onto the pavement in front of you, maybe about 10, 15 feet ahead of you.
So in between, interposed between myself and Bowers?
Yes.
Okay.
What do you do? Just carry on?
Well, I avoid getting wet, wait for it to pass, and then keep going.
Okay. And this time you can't avoid hearing something. And this time it's behind you. It sounds like something, like a big wet sack, has fallen behind you.
What I'm going to do, I just absolutely barrel it over to Bowers and knock into him and say, Mr. Bowers, it's after you. I took the liberty of checking that you're okay. It's behind us. We got to move.
Okay, well, that's what you're intending to do, but... you might need to escape the clutches of this thing that's just flopped onto the pavement behind you. Are you not looking round then? You're just going to try and run, not even see what you're facing?
Absolutely. If I hear that sloppy sack sound, I know something's coming.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Unless you turn around, this thing is going to get a bonus dice on its attack roll. It's up to you.
Okay, if I don't turn around, it's going to get a bonus dice. If I turn around, I'm going to have to do a sanity roll. So excuse me, so fuck you. I'll turn around and have a look at it.
Okay, well, this is what you see coming out of the river. It's quite indescribable. It's this sort of collection of frog-like legs and a congeries of eyes and gaping toothed maws and this soft gelatinous flesh with spines coming out of it.
How tall is it?
It looks like a scrotum.
Like a scrotum. How tall is it?
Might look like your scrotum.
It's about 8 feet tall, this thing. It's huge. It came out in this big spray of water.
Okay, so it's kind of double my height.
Well, no. What, you're not 4 feet tall?
Jesus Christ, it looks like Dr. Emery's scrotum. I never thought I'd have to see that again.
Well, it resembles a horrible insectile toad. And it's shoved itself up on its grotesque, translucent belly. And it lashes out at you with its raised forelegs that are almost like mantis legs.
It's translucent.
Its face is wet and ill-formed. The belly is translucent. The legs are more sort of solid and looking. But yeah, it's going to lash out at you with two of these horrific mantis-like legs. But the first thing you have to do is make a sanity roll for seeing this thing.
Okay. Well, I can't remember if I'm on 64 or 70. Should we see if that matters? Cross that bridge when we come to it.
Oh, yeah.
13.
Okay, well, you only lose 1 point of sanity. I leave it to your memory to remember what you were on. You were pretty...
I think I used my pen last time, and that's on 64, so 63. I'm going down to 63.
Okay, well, yes, because it wouldn't have gone up. We haven't had an increase. So the good thing is you don't have a bout of madness for seeing this thing. I don't know, maybe it reminds you of your grandma's cooking or something. I don't know, it looks like something you might stir up in a pot.
Not only does it remind me of Dr. Emery's scrotum, it also reminds me of my granddad's scrotum. Reminds me of all the scrotums I've seen in my short life.
All the scrotums and all the world you had to walk into this one.
That's a terrifying thought. You had to unzip yourself into this one.
I have to say, not normally it's me lashing out at the scrota, but this time I think the scrotum's got the upper hand, the upper sack on me.
Yes, so it lashes out with two claws, and it's also going to try and bite you with its horrible tooth maw.
At the same time?
Yes, yes. It has a lot of attacks, this thing. Mm-hmm. So now you can dodge as many times as you want. I never know how to rule this, Scott. If you're dodging multiple attacks from the same enemy, do you get penalty dice on the second and third?
Yeah, you get a penalty die on the second and third one. Yeah.
What happens on the fourth one?
You just get a penalty die.
Okay. Oh, you only get one penalty dice?
Yeah, I've been doing that wrong for years. I did just an escalating number of penalty dice and then levels and so on. But it is just one on each one over one, a single attack.
Okay, so the first one you can make a regular dodge. Okay. And you're going to need to, because I just rolled a 4.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Which is an extreme. Shit.
I'm going to need to roll a what?
Well, you need to get an extreme. Because I just rolled a 4.
Okay, you've just rolled a 4. This is a dodge. An extreme would be 9 or under.
Right.
Okay, can I push this? Because it's combat.
No. You can spend luck, though.
I can spend luck, though. Okay, right. Well, here we go. What happens if I've got 0 luck?
Nothing. You just can't ever spend it. And don't ever get into a group luck roll.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna keep my distance from the other two so that we're never in a situation where there would be a group luck roll. I'm going to call them by phone for the rest of this campaign.
By the end of this fight, you may be a very long way away from there.
Here we go. Here we go. Oh, I thought it was a 6 for a moment there. It's a 90.
Okay, that is no good. That's no good. So you take 6 hit points of damage.
So down from 10 to 4.
If I was being really mean, I would declare that as an impale, but no.
You just told me that I've just been slapped. You can't call a slap an impale.
No, slash.
Slashed.
Yeah, it's like razor sharp.
It's peeing on me.
Right, here comes the second one.
You didn't mention anything about razor sharp gelatinous blades for arms.
The first one was a major wound.
Oh, there were claws. There were claws, it's true.
Oh, shit. Yes, you've just received a major wound as well. So you need to make a constitution roll to stay conscious.
Okay. Can I push that?
No, I don't think so.
Does it have to be extreme?
No, just make a regular constitution roll.
You know, you were saying you wanted to be a better detective. Have you thought about playing an American lady?
I tell you what, I'm seeing vistas of potential opening up to me very quickly.
No, that's your abdomen.
Oh, okay. I thought it was your scrotum for a moment. That's a 3, motherfucker.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. You stay conscious.
That was the roll you needed a moment ago.
Yeah, that really was the roll. Now, you still take a major wound, though. So I'll say that, yeah, that sounds good to me. I think you've basically sliced through your jacket. Are you wearing a jacket or a coat? Or?
I'm wearing my cleaning lady. Yeah, my cleaning. Exactly. Well, no, it's not overalls. This is
a little pinny.
This is, yeah, I've got a pinny.
You've got a maid's uniform on. Well, your maid's uniform is now in shreds. This mantis-like leg sliced through the air and cut right through the dress and right through your abdomen, and you are just spurting blood out of your stomach. It is a deep wound.
Am I standing in the same position, or has it knocked me over?
No, because it's about to attack you again. But I presume you don't want to be knocked over. No, you're still standing. It hasn't knocked you down. Because it's like getting a knife cut to the stomach.
I toughed it out and got my stomach cut in half for the trouble.
Yes.
Good.
And the good news is, it misses with its second attack. That was very important, because I think that could have killed you. However, it still gets a bite.
What? That's a third attack.
Yeah, these are really horrible, these creatures. And then it just lurches forward and opens up one of its multiple mouths, and you can see its fangs are dripping with this black, sticky substance, and it tries to sink its teeth into your shoulder. And that is a hit, but you can try and dodge with a penalty dice this time, and you really need this to succeed.
Or I take it. Well, you know, might as well try the dodge, eh? Okay, here we go. Here we go. Penalty dice. Fucking hell. That's a 96.
Oh, that's a fumble.
Well, you have failed then. And I think that's a fumble. Well, unless your dodge is above 50.
Sadly, it's only 45.
So yes, that is a fumble.
I don't consider that to be a fumble.
There goes the feather duster.
Yeah, I just consider that to being torn apart by some horrific thing coming out of the Thames. I don't consider that I did anything wrong there myself, personally.
No, you didn't do anything wrong at all. You didn't do anything wrong at all.
Less of the F word, please. Thank you.
All right. Well, the thing is, I'm going to roll the damage.
Yeah.
We'll see. If I roll a 5 or a 6, I think you're... Well, no, I don't think you die, but you're dying.
Well, I don't...
In fact, if I roll a 4, I think you're also dying, aren't you?
Well, I've got 4 hit points, so...
A 1. You are not dying.
I've got 3 hits left.
You got 3. However, you now need to make another constitution roll as you can feel this burning sensation from this black ichor that's being pumped into your flesh.
Fucking Thames water. 27.
Ooh. My God. And you're feeling woozy and dizzy and just terribly kind of sick from the feeling, but you somehow manage to stay on your feet. What are you going to do?
I'm going to shoot this fucking thing. Because you may remember that I took my...
Are you sure?
Yeah, fucking right. You know, it's bitten into my shoulder. I'm pulling out my gun, sticking it under the chin and fucking shooting it.
Okay, good luck.
I'm sure this will go fine.
I'm sure this will go absolutely fine. As this is all happening, you hear a cry from Bowers as he spins round and he sees this awful sight of the lady he was talking with not 10 minutes ago, suddenly in mortal life or death struggle with some horrific entity. And I'm going to make a roll to see whether he just runs. I think he's just going to run. I would give him a 10% chance of not running at this point.
Okay.
So if I roll a 10 or below, he's going to come to your aid.
Okay. All right.
I just rolled a 3.
You're knight in shining tweed.
Oh my God. So you hear...
I think Bowers is deeply attracted to Rita.
I think he must be, because why on earth he would stick around?
I think he sees that, you know, he's about to sell the book and get loads of money, and I think he just has had some kind of vision of his affluent future with this strong, young detective.
Lena.
Rita. Nora.
Yes, either that or he's got a thing for maid's uniforms, one or the other.
Both.
I think, yes. Well, okay, that was his intention, but as he kind of starts towards you, maybe it was too dark for him to see exactly, but as he comes forward, he gets the full sight of this thing, and he has to make a sanity roll.
Okay.
And he rolls an 8, so he's fine. I don't know what I'm rolling today. I've rolled the most ridiculous... I've rolled 4, 3, 8.
I think he must have read about this perhaps in the book or in some kind of other thing. You know, he knows this is the kind of thing that's after him.
And maybe out of the corner of your eye, you can see him rushing forward, and he's picked up like a metal pole from a bit of scaffolding or something, and he comes rushing forward and he says, "What the fuck is that?"
"I think it's Dr. Emery Scrotum or something like it."
So Rita, I admire your tenacity, but here goes your attack, because you're going to get to shoot. In fact, you'll also get to shoot first next round, because you have your gun ready now. You will have your gun ready, but you have 6. You don't have an automatic, do you? What kind of gun have you got?
As far as I can see here, I've got a Smith & Wesson revolver.
Oh, God. Right. I don't know what that is. We'll call that a 41.
What calibre does it say? Or?
I don't know.
We'll say it's a 45.
Damage here is 1d10, it says.
Oh, no. In that case, it's a 41. Oh, the good news is that's got 8 rounds.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll get to shoot all of them, but we'll see what happens. So I assume you want to shoot 3 times?
Yeah, I'm shooting.
Okay, so you'll just get 3 regular rolls because you're at point blank.
Okay, 3 regular rolls. Here we go. 72. The first one misses. It must have just gone through some fat.
That's not good.
That's a 91. The next one misses as well.
Oh, God.
But then I roll a 1.
A 1?
Ooh.
001.
That's good. You really needed that.
Yeah.
Maybe you get it right through its central, like, head, like, mass. The first two just went through just almost amorphous, gelatinous flesh, but the The third one, you hear it thud into something more solid, and it sends this spray of blood and brain matter out the back of this creature's head, leaving a massive gaping hole, and it seems to writhe in pain. But you haven't killed it, not quite. It's still going, just about. Now the question is, can Bowers get hit in?
I get to attack first next round as well.
You're going to get to attack first next round as well.
Okay.
So Bowers rushes forward and swings the pole, and he hits with a 26. This thing cannot dodge. This would be a D6.
It's a scrotum, you know, that's it.
It's a flopping scrotum. Oh, unfortunately, it just sort of almost bounces off the gelatinous mass. So it's still alive. That hardly did anything, that last one. Now, Rita, you can feel that you need to get to a hospital pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
So it's now or never. If you don't manage to kill this thing now, this could be curtains for you, Rita. So,
seeing as I think you could give me a bonus dice here, what I'm going to do is just, like, jump on it. I just jump on it and just absolutely ram the gun deep into whatever holes I've made that hit something or whatever. It's just on this thing, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. So you only want to fire once then?
No.
By the sound of it. Well, you're already getting your bonus dice from being point blank, but it's counteracted by shooting three times. If you want to just take a more careful, like you said, shove it into the hole and fire it, you will get a bonus dice. It's up to you. You can either do more wild shots or, as you said, jam it into the hole and get a bonus.
Okay. Yeah, no, but that's what we need, isn't it? That's what we need. That's what we need. Bonus dice. We're going for the single shot bonus dice.
Jam it into the hole.
Yep.
This one's important.
Well, that is a fail. That is a fail, so I'm going to roll again. I'm going to roll again here.
Can you see it?
Just about. 34 against 50, so I hit.
Ooh, that was important. Well, here's the question. How much damage do you do?
Okay, here's the D10. Any bonuses for point blank there?
No.
It's a 10.
Yay!
It's a 0 on a D10.
And believe me, you needed a high roll there. This thing has armor. And it makes this sickening, crunching sound as the bullet just barrels through what must be its central brain case. And the head almost seems to shatter into fragments of eyes and teeth and mouths just sprayed backwards and tumbling into the dark Thames below. And then the whole mass just staggers backwards and falls with this great splash into the dark waters below. And Bowers is standing there panting, saying, "That's the worst fucking thing I've ever seen come out of that river, and believe me, I've seen some bad shit."
Rita says, "It's a good job that I was protecting you."
"Protecting me? Fucking hell, if it hadn't been for me, that thing would have bitten your fucking head off."
"You're fucking joking."
"Look, what the hell are you doing?"
"I'm waving the blood, the black tar-stained gun around."
"You were fucking following me, weren't you?"
"You nearly hit your own fucking head with that metal pole bouncing off the thing."
"I weakened it. You might have put the final bullet in its brain, but if I hadn't whacked it with that scaffolding, you'd be inside its gullet by now. Now listen, lady."
"I just shot it before that as well. What are you like? Anyway, the point is, that thing was out for you, and it's thanks to me."
"What, it jumped you then? You tell me that."
"Because it's fucking stupid."
"Well, I don't know about that, but I know one thing. You were following me. I know your type. You think you can break in, put the screws on me and get this book. I know your type."
I think it's a little bit more nuanced than this, you see."
"Well, look, it's no good. Anyway, look at the state of it. You need to get to a hospital. Your guts are coming out, miss."
And I look down at my guts then and look at him and probably just flop onto him a little bit, really.
He says, "Oh, for fuck's sake. All right, look, I'll get you to the London Hospital. It's not too far from here. You need that sewing up. Look, I can definitely see a kidney."
"Just shut the fuck up. Get me to the hospital."
This is the best meet cute ever.
So leaning on Bowers's broad shoulder, rounded shoulders, you stagger off towards the London Hospital. I guess you got your hand firmly pressed on your stomach to stop yourself bleeding to death at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're going to need medical attention. Now, I think the way it works, isn't this right? Because it's been so long since I've played non-pulp with a severe wound. Until she gets proper medical treatment, she can't regain more than half her hit points or something. Is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, I think you stay injured until you get... Yeah, we'll figure it out. But yeah, right now, Rita...
But happily, she's going to hospital, so that'll get resolved.
Yes, happily. Assuming they don't fuck up the surgery, of course, that's always a chance. So Bowers helps you stagger down the street to the London hospital where you are admitted, Rita. Well, that could have gone better. It could have gone worse also. Could have gone a lot worse.
It could have gone a lot worse. I was convinced she was going to die.
It was just, you know, on balance, it was just kind of average. You know, it was in between the two.
Yeah, you had a 50-50 chance of sort of being dead at one point. So you did well. You did well.
Thank God he wasn't a Labrador.
Bit passé in the end.
If you hadn't got that critical role, that would have been curtains, I think, because you did 20 damage in one go. You didn't even have to roll the other 10. That's the way I ruled it. Anyway, well, you survived. But Bowers is now on to you. I don't think he'll be sticking around for when you'll come out of surgery, I'm afraid. But over to Milton and Emery. You want to open the doors to perception, I take it?
Yeah, well, I think we'll have a couple more gins before heading out because we need to be properly fortified for this.
So, Emery, is this location specific or are you suggesting we can open up a hole anywhere?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, we are aware of, I think, at least two locations where such doorways have been opened up. Certainly the one in the wall that we're heading towards at the moment in this alleyway. And there was another one that I'm half convinced that I staggered through, but I must admit that I was in a somewhat delirious state of mind at the time, and I'm not entirely sure where that happened. I might be able to hazard a guess, but it was all a bit hazy.
And what about this huge rent in the sky that I saw that appeared to be going all the way back to the architect's office?
I think we decided that we were going to investigate that tomorrow by visiting the architect's office when they were open to save any potential legal entanglements, as neither of us is exactly as skilled. But on the other hand, when it comes to acts of sorcery, we are unparalleled, and I think that we should be able to find some way of reopening this doorway and finding out precisely where it leads.
Neither of you have ever had any accidents whilst trying to cast spells, have you? Never. Nothing's ever gone wrong.
This is what the gin's for, Andy.
Exactly. A few gins will help.
Yeah.
Yes, we've all been there. So, fortified, with that inner glow of courage, conviction and self-belief, you head back to Mitre Square, to the alleyway where Dives seem to do some conjuring trick and disappeared through a door. It's very late by now. The rain has started up again and it's wet and damp out. There's no one around because it's just a horrible night. But that makes it all the better, of course, for dark sorcery. Now, the spell you learned... Let's wind this back. Did you learn a particular... I don't think we even specified, did we? I was from the Mega Pelisomancy.
Yeah. Oh, you mean from reading through the book?
Oh, I thought you were going to try and do something from the book. Is that...
Yes, I mean, that's a possibility. If there's something that I think I've picked up from the book that I can do. Otherwise, I was going to go with spontaneous use of the Cthulhu Mythos to try to trace the doorway and reopen that, because I love that 13% chance I've got.
Because what could possibly go wrong? I mean, you can spend luck on that, so that's the good thing. But, no, well, I mean, you could, if you want to try... Because the book seems to have a lot of that kind of thing in it. You did find a few seemed like incantations in there, judging by what you know already about these kind of books. And one of them seems to be related to doors or passageways or something of that nature. Because the whole book is about reconfiguring spaces within cities and using the power of structures to do kinds of crazy stuff.
And also, this does sort of tie in with some of the sorcery that Emery has done before, because that was all to do with manipulating space and dimensions, so I mean, this feels, I suppose, in some ways, oddly familiar.
So
I'm picturing this as the two of us standing there in this alleyway, Emery holding an umbrella and asking Milton to hold some kind of light source while the two of them are huddled under the umbrella going over this tome, trying to find a relevant passageway to read out at this section of wall.
Amazing.
Well, very drunk.
You know what this is? You are recreating a scene from The Antipope.
Yes, oh God. Yeah, this is pure Robert Rankin, isn't it? It really is.
This is pure Robert Rankin. Brilliant. So, before you decide whether you want to just do spontaneous, looking through the book, maybe in your gin-soaked haze, you see that there's some nasty things in there that could come in handy. There's a spell that allows you to cause accidents within cities that can electrocute or impale a victim or have something random like fall on their head like a collapsed scaffolding or something like that. You can basically create urban accidents. That's pretty interesting.
Hang on. I mean, so would this have meant that you could have caused an electricity surge pre-electricity? Is this book from before?
No, this is the book's from 1902.
Oh, okay. I'll just shut up then. Thanks.
So it's post-electricity. You can cause mania and phobias in people from the sound of screeching, chittering telegraph wires or the claustrophobia of crowds. You can actually have, deteriorate someone's mental state. There's a spell to do that. Now, this one might be, there's a third one that you see that might be, it's more about vanishing into crowds or blind alleys, but also seems like it could be a way of, going through doors that weren't there. It's basically a way of moving through the city through a sort of null space or something that isn't really the physical universe. So maybe that one. There's another one that allows you to look through the eyes of statues or pigeons.
Interesting.
Okay.
Or through the distant windows of a tall building. Basically, you can put your vision to some location or object or creature within a city.
It sounds very Tim Powers.
And then there's a rather terrifying one at the end where you can cause like small earthquakes or sewer mains to explode or underground derailment of trains or basically urban disasters.
I'd rather not be sprayed with sewage if that's...
Yes. Let's avoid reading from this section, shall we?
Seems like it's a pretty powerful book, really. But of course, to learn each spell and to cast them, of course, there's always a cost. But, well...
So this null space, perhaps, do you think? Is this?
I suppose it is both similar and rather different. It does, I suppose, some sort of crowd or evading a pursuer, but if this is related to the sorcery that Mr. Dives cast, then maybe we can replicate it.
Well, I was pursuing him.
Yes, yes. Why not? Why not? I'm sure this will be fine.
Let's do it.
Just so we all are on the same page, null space is the linear subspace of the domain of the map, which is mapped to the zero vector. Just so that we all know that, so we're on the same.
Yeah, we're all clear, yeah.
Yeah, is that good?
This is taking me back to the maths I studied at university, and I really wish it weren't.
I don't even know what any of those words mean.
Is that the deviance from the base zero line?
Oh, don't start, Barney.
Null deviance.
Jesus. I mean, it sounds interesting. It sounds cool and sci-fi. Cool and sci-fi, but maybe not.
Yeah.
All right, so what is it you're trying to achieve, Dr. Emery? I think that's the key here. Because I don't think any of us really understand what you're trying to achieve here.
I think it's bold to assume that Emery does.
I suspect it's got something to do with his scrotum.
We want to know where Dives went.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, you want to know where Dives went? Okay.
It sounds very much like he opened up a door in this wall into somewhere else, and we want to open the door ourselves.
Okay. All right, that makes a lot of sense.
Really? Oh, good.
Blimey, I surprised myself.
There's a first, yeah.
Had you never thought just to go to his club and see if he was there? Or it's not a question of tracking him down, it was a question of finding...
It's far more interesting. I don't want to find Dives as much as see what he was up to.
There are certain things that you're overlooking here, that we are drunk, half mad, and somewhat obsessed with sorcery. So, I mean, yes, we could just go and visit him, or we could do this.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine.
When is a door not a door?
Indeed. So do you want to try and learn that spell? That's the first thing we need to... So you need to make, I'll say, just a regular intelligence roll, because you're slightly drunk. So it all makes more sense when you're drunk.
Okay, that is a success.
There it is. So I'm also going to say that you're both pissed at this point. I think that makes perfect sense.
I think the determining factor of when we're casting the spell is less to do with astrological signs and charts and you know, all these subtle machinations that go into determining the best forms, the best way to carry out a spell, and more to do with the fact that it's closing time.
Now, the question is, as we all know from Ford Prefect, moving through transdimensional space requires to be a specifically amount of drunk. So we will see whether you have hit that number. And so you head down to the alleyway, and Dr. Emery, you've got the book open in front of you. Maybe Milton's got the umbrella over you to stop it getting wet. You're poring over it.
I think with the hand over one eye because of the words. Otherwise, the words just keep getting blurred.
Indeed they do. And then I think, is it a hard power roll the first time you try and cast a spell?
Yeah, I can't remember whether it's a regular or a hard.
I think it's a hard.
I think you're right, I think it is a hard. But the important thing is it can be pushed.
It can be pushed, yes. 176. Yes, it is a hard power roll, I'm afraid. So, let's see. What's your power?
My POW is 60 and I've rolled a 41. Am I going to spend 11 points of luck on this, or am I going to push it?
It's up to you, of course.
I mean, it would be funnier to push it.
Spend! Oh, okay, yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Scott. It's funnier, yeah.
Yeah, I never miss the opportunity for a pushed roll, that's what I say.
Have you tried putting your hand over the other eye?
Yeah, there's that, and I think it's also, as Andy was saying a moment ago, you've got to be exactly the right kind of drunk, so that's the point at which Emery reaches into his pocket and pulls out the bottle of gin that he stole from behind the bar on the way out, and takes a very deep slug of it.
I tell you what will really push you over the edge is if you have a bit of snuff tobacco.
Oh, yes.
Like, that'll mess you right up.
Yeah, a bit of snuff as well, yes. Okay. And of course I'll share these with Milton as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm up for some snuff.
It's probably got some opium laced in there as well.
Okay, so let's see how this goes. That is just the right amount of gin. That's a 19.
Just the right amount of gin. You pushed. Oh, my God, you got a hard success. This is what you needed. And believe me, if you would have failed that, that would have been a very nasty consequences, I can assure you. I'll save that up for another time, though, because
I'm slightly disappointed to have passed there.
Yeah, well, I guess we would have found out.
But I think with that extra gin, what that means is Emery is slurring the words, these alien words, in just the right way. That, you know, if he'd spoken them clearly, it would have been wrong. But, you know, now that he's half cut and is stumbling over bits of it, then, you know, this is exactly how they're meant to be pronounced.
Because they're not designed for human mouths, of course, these words. And so your mouth is only partially human at this point. And, well, describe what you do. I mean, you're up against the wall and you're making this gestures and sounds.
Yes.
Describe what you see happening.
I'm tracing the outline of where I believe the door must be. And just repeatedly, almost, you know, obsessively going backwards and forwards, tracing around the brickwork, stopping and examining every now and then and just seeing whether there's any change to the structure of the mortar or gaps between the bricks. And this has taken a few attempts. Emery's gone back over the spell like three times at this stage. And in the final time, it's just, you know, basically screaming the words out like, you know, like any drunk on the streets of London at 1 o'clock in the morning, just pointing at this wall and demanding in this alien language that it open up and let him in.
Indeed.
Instead of tracing it on the bricks of the wall, Emery's tracing it in the air where this fake wall and this fake doorway was.
And you see this glowing outline of a doorway appear. It's not like a wooden door. It seems to be almost made out of the same lattice work, the same lines of architectural lines that Milton saw in the air. And then the door just swings forward towards you. And what you see beyond is remarkable. You see this warm candlelight appearing in front of you, like you're looking into a warmly lit room with flickering candlelight, and you can hear voices as well, and you can see figures inside. They haven't seemed to notice you, or react to this doorway opening, and you realize that one of them is Dives. He's sitting there. He's taken his hat off, and it's sitting on a table. He's just planted on a coffee table next to him. He's sitting in an armchair. There's a fireplace beyond, and the room is candlelit elsewhere. And there seems to be a young lady sitting in the armchair opposite him, and they're in conversation. You can just about make out what they're saying.
Does she seem to have a German accent?
Maybe. Possibly. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, she does.
I'll look round at Milton. I assume you're seeing what I'm seeing here.
Bloody hell, Emery. Is this working, or is that just really good snuff?
Let's find out, I'll say, and step through the door.
It certainly looks warmer in there than it is out here.
I'll tuck the book into my coat pocket as I do so.
Amazing. You step through, and are you going as well, Milton?
Yes. I put the brolly down, obviously. I'm not a maniac.
So you step through, and it's very strange, because as you step through the threshold of this door, you realise that you've both become sort of transparent, both you and Emery, like your architectural drawings yourself. And you're standing in a room. It seems like a normal room, but you and Emery, you can see this opening behind you still. Maybe you look over your shoulders. And when you look at your bodies, you're completely transparent, just like outlines. And I want you both to make a sanity roll at this point.
That seems fair.
Of course, yes. Let's...
That was a fumble.
That ain't good. Well, look, the good news is it's only a D6. The bad news is you take the full 6. Emery takes the full 6.
On the bright side, that's not enough to make me indefinitely insane. I mean, it's very close. Very close indeed.
Very close.
So I have to roll a D6 as well, yeah? Yeah.
You need to roll a D6.
Okay,
well, you don't have a bout of madness, but Emery, you need to make that intelligence roll right now. Of course. An extreme success.
An extreme success. Oh, dear.
So, Emery, I will say that given everything that's happened, you tell me how this manifests, this bout of madness that you're having.
Yes. Emery is looking down at his transparent nature and looks around at Milton wide-eyed and said, do you suppose this is what, an out-of-body experience? Or have we died and become ghosts or travelled or passed through to some higher state of matter? There's no way back. What if this is one-way journey? No, this is science. We need to approach this in a scientific way and determine specifically what's happened. Yes, let's determine whether we are physically manifest upon this plane. So I'm going to go up and punch Dives in the face.
Brilliant. Milton, you see obviously Emery having this extreme reaction. It's completely freaking you out as well, even though you didn't have a bout of madness. You took lost four sanity. What's your response?
I'm not sure. I'm not going to attack anyone. I just, bloody hell, Emery, you're panicking me. God, do I see any food in the room?
Yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, they're having an evening meal of some kind, maybe sitting by the fire.
I'm going to make a beeline for some comfort food if I see anything that might fit that.
Yeah, so Dives has maybe some steamed fish or a plaice in a wine sauce with capers. And you see to your great delight that the lady, delicate though she is, she's eating a giant steak. A giant broiled steak sitting on a platter. And which I think that is probably what attracts you, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm going to go straight for the steak. Just a comforting mouthful of steak just to try and calm my nerves.
Okay. I would say that given what's going on, I'm not sure either of you have got it together enough to really listen to what this conversation is. Or given that you're in this sort of fugue state, both of you, by the sound of it.
Yeah, Emery's certainly not at all interested in what they're saying. He's far more interested in determining the nature of his situation.
Yeah, I think so. And given how quickly this is all happening, we'll just move it on to the action. So you move forward in this very peculiar way, Emery.
Yeah.
You don't feel the floor beneath your feet. You're walking and you're moving forwards, but you don't feel the floor beneath your feet. And you just throw a punch at Dives, maybe round the side of his face as you're standing behind him.
I think rather than a punch, it is just sort of a backhanded slap across his face.
Okay. You swing your arm and almost inevitably it just passes straight through him. And the only visible reaction you see from him, he doesn't get knocked back, he doesn't seem to react. You just see him kind of tense up slightly, and he clears his throat. He goes, oh, sorry, I got something stuck in my throat, I think.
You see that, Milton? Oh, yes, we are having some sort of effect on the physical world. I wonder what happens if I do this, I'll say, and place my hand inside his head and just reach down into his torso.
Fantastic. We're now in Rent-A-Ghost. We've moved from Robert Rankin to Rent-A-Ghost. Actually, there should be a Rent-A-Ghost. I mean, Rent-A-Ghost needs... Anyway.
Let's do it. Put your money where your mouth is. Let's do Rent-A-Ghost. Fucking hell.
Let's do Rent-A-Ghost.
I was giving Dives a metaphysical fisting, and Milton was about to... Yes.
I'm assuming that I can't actually grab the steak. Am I kind of desperately grabbing for it and not actually connecting?
Precisely. You move forward in this strange, floaty way that Emery moved forward, and you bend down. You see that lovely, seared, juicy flesh of the steak, those lovely sear lines. The fat is sort of melting off the side, and it looks like this lady... She's not really touched it. She has her knife and fork there. Her knife is a very sharp, almost like a kitchen knife affair. And I think you just go down with your hands, really. Mm. You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
You try and grab the steak. You try and grab the steak, and your hands just pass through it, and it's very disappointing, of course. It's very disappointing. And then the woman turns her head and stares directly at you, although it's more like she's staring directly through you. Because she's looking your direction, but she's not focusing on your eyes. She's, like, looking past you, through you. And she says, "Is that you, Lord?"
"Who? What? Sorry, I desperately want some of that steak."
And then a smile just passes across her face, and she just kind of nods, and then goes back to conversing with Dives. Meanwhile, Emery has proceeded to... I bet it sounds like you're trying to disembowel him from the top down.
Well, I was looking to see whether there was any effect I could have on him, because it did look like I've disconcerted him by passing my hand through him before. And so, yes, I am approaching this in a scientific and methodical manner, or at least...
Some deep phrenology.
As close to that as my gin-addled, maddened mind can piece together. And I am reaching in, starting with the top of his head, going through in layers to see what form of contact produces what kind of physical reaction.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And you almost feel like you can feel that his insides, but only in this very light, wispy way, like they're made from soggy tissue paper.
I'll give his pineal gland a tickle on the way past.
And as you're manipulating in this very intangible way his innards, he suddenly sort of goes pale and starts sweating, and he says, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry, my dear, but something must have disagreed with me." And then he shoots up from the chair and he rushes out the room, and then you hear this sort of combined sound of vomiting and the spattering of diarrhea coming out of a large man as he almost made it to the toilet, but not quite.
Did you see that, Milton? It would appear that in our current form we possess the power of being a powerful emetic.
I'm just frustrated that I can't eat this damn food, although what just happened there's kind of put me off it somewhat.
Yes. I mean, if we can find some way, of interacting with the physical world more substantially while we're in this state. Obviously we are having some form of physical effect, as demonstrated by our...
I'm scanning the room looking for candles and stuff, maybe.
Yes. I mean, we might be able to make use of it by stealing some valuable books.
Oh.
If only you could figure out how to pick things up, that would be a real boon, wouldn't it?
Bit of a stickler.
You could do a spot hidden roll at this point, both of you, if you wish, to kind of look around and see whether you can discern anything.
Well, definitely.
Well, look at that, Emery, in his maddened state.
You're nothing.
But Emery, I think your intensity is aiding you here. As you look around, you somehow intuit that this is not Dives' chambers or apartments. This is the lady's drawing room. And you see that, yes, there are many interesting books on the shelves, many arcane tomes, objects of occult importance. And at one point you're by the window, looking out onto the dark street below, and you realise... You see a street sign, and you realise that this must be Islington. It's Upper Street that you're on, in Islington. and you're pretty sure you could find the place again if only you could somehow find your way back to the real world.
Yes, yes. Milton, do you think maybe I'm approaching this in the wrong state of mind? Do you want to see whether perhaps you can have any physical effect upon these people as well? If we can find some way of influencing them or controlling them in this state, then...
I'm kind of flailing around, trying to maybe knock over a glass or something. Just swing my arms around. Yes, I'm trying.
Yes, but it's not effective. Obviously, every time you try and touch something, your hand just passes through it. And perhaps you feel that maybe you can have some kind of almost psychic influence on them, or that it's not genuinely physical.
How about this? I sit in the chair that she's sitting in and see if I can control her from within, or perhaps, you know, although obviously I'm much larger than she is, so...
Fantastic. So, at this point, Dive seems to have got control of his bowels and he's cleaned himself up. He's mopping his brow as he comes in. He says, "I'm terribly sorry, Bridget. I don't know what's come over me." She says, "It is pronounced Birgit, not Bridget, Mr. Dives. That is the German way." And he goes, I'm terribly sorry, terribly sorry. "Now, let us return to business. We both want this book. We both have our own means of getting hold of it. Yours are rather more direct, should we say?" And she says, "Yeah, I am not a patient woman. I will get it one way or the other, Mr. Dives." He goes, "Well, look, we can perhaps treat this as a business transaction, not as a cause for conflict, do you not think, Miss von Kant?" And she ponders it and says, "Maybe. We shall see. If I can get hold of it through my own methods, then there is no need to do business." And she says, "Now, my steak is getting cold. I wish to eat." And she grabs the fork. It's more like one of those big forks that you would like stick in a potato and roast over a fire, and picks up this big sharp knife. And Dives looks at her strange. She says, "Rather unusual cutlery you have there." And she says, "Yeah, I like my beef to come in big chunks, you see." And she starts slicing into the steak, cuts it into like four pieces, and stabs one of them and almost holds it up in front of Dives, who looks a bit taken aback. And then she just like puts this huge piece into her mouth and starts chewing away.
"Can I taste it?"
At which point, Milton, you sit down on her lap. I imagine this scene is insane, but you lower yourself gently onto her lap.
Oh God.
Yeah, so you lower yourself gently onto her lap, and you feel this very odd sensation as you're sort of passing through her, and she sort of shudders. This tremor runs through her body. I don't think you've ever made a woman shudder like that in your life, Milton, but today you have. I don't know where I'm going with this. She shudders as you lower yourself, like to be transposed on top of her. And as she puts the chunk of charred but bloody raw on the inside steak into her mouth and starts chewing, you can feel its delicious, greasy, meaty flavour in your mouth as she starts chewing.
I'm chewing her long. Yeah.
And she's chewing, and it feels very strange because it's sort of in you, but it's in her and you're inside her. And it's hard to know where you end and she begins and where the steak begins. As she chews away and the juices are sort of trickling down and she's swallowing, and you're getting this sort of secondhand steak experience. It's like secondhand smoking, secondhand eating.
That's not as bad as, you know, roast beef crisps, is it?
Don't go there.
Okay, good.
And then she takes an almost inconceivably large swallow, and this big chunk of meat just starts forcing its way down her and your throat at the same time. You feel it as if you're almost going to gag, and then she has consumed it. And Milton, you're feeling very peculiar right now, Milton, because you realise somehow that you have become slightly intertwined with this woman, and this woman is somehow slightly intertwined with your old friend, Mr. Y. And I think that is where we will leave it. For the day, because I can't I'm done. I am done.
Listen to Golanak to Duckin.
Did it calm my nerves?
Strangely, yeah. I mean, you're an Egonalak to Duckin. Amazing. Milton inside Birgit von Kant inside Egonalak. And you're all good. It's all good.
Bring your parasol. It may be small, it may be big. He repairs them all with what you call a thingamajig. Pitter patter patter, pitter patter patter, here comes the rain. Let it pitter patter, let it pitter patter, don't mind the rain.
It's thank you time again. And as usual, I wanted to thank all of our backers at all levels. We can't do the show without you. Well, we could, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as good, because with your support and help, we can do all of the extra things that we want to do. I also want to thank all the players, who I realized I haven't really been thanking in our thanks section. So thank you to all the players. I love you all dearly, and I hope that we can continue doing Grizzly Peaks far, far into the future until we're old and grey and can't remember what happened in the last session. Actually, I think that kind of applies to me already. But for the rest of you, you'll get there soon. Don't worry. And if you do like our show, which I assume you are if you've listened all the way to the end, then do come and join the fun at patreon.com/grizzlypeaks. Look forward to seeing you.
Today he'll patch up your troubles, then go on his way singing toodle-oo-ma-loo-ma toodle-ay, toodle-oo-ma-loo-ma toodle-ay, and the umbrellas to mend today.